Thank you very much. Can everybody hear me if I'm this close?
Yep.
Okay. First of all, I'm a Crystal Beach boy, not Niagara Falls. I moved to Niagara Falls in grade 6. Thank you. This is Jesus talk. Guys like me don't exist outside of God's grace. So you cannot exist if you live my life, right? Period. And so my talk will be about what God did in my life that let me stand here in front of you, because I shouldn't be. I shouldn't be standing here in front of you. Okay. ADHD dyslexic boy, right? Okay, back a bit. ADHD dyslexic boy. But the H isn't hyperactivity, it's hypersensitivity. We didn't know that back then. I would just be an ADD boy. We didn't know anything back in my day. I grew up on this beach, by the way, with my cousin Kerry Wilhelm. So he was on this road over here, and I was over here. Right? Growing up, ADHD dyslexic, being a nut bar, as my dad called me, that was the term, was fine when I was here. I'm a Shirk and a Wilhelm. Everybody's my relative. When I moved to Niagara Falls in grade 6, now I'm the new guy showing up in school halfway through the school year. I'll be 70 like in a year or so, and I can tell you the first and last names of those bullies that bullied me and show you the houses they lived in. That's how impactful it was. I couldn't, because I was sensitive, it was bothering me a lot. And so what I did was, to stop the bullying, I just didn't go where the bullies were. So I've never been on skates in my life because the bullies hung around the arena. I never played musical instruments because they hung around the school, and so you had to go there to do band. They would beat me up, and if they didn't beat me up, they would throw sticks through the spokes of my bike and stuff like this. When I started high school, I thought, this is going to be fantastic. It's going to be fine. The catchment area for high schools, they're going to Stamford Green. I'm going to Ann Meyer, right? So on my way to high school, it's 1970. I'm 14 years old. Everybody walked to school, by the way, back then. I saw the coolest guy I've ever seen in my life. If you're older, Davy Jones from the Monkees. He was 5'6". He was 20, 21 years old. Long hair, Fu Manchu mustache, bell bottoms, platform shoes. I was still short hair, khaki, desert boots, white t-shirt, right? I was still grade 8. He was working on a British sports car. I said, cool car. He became my friend. I couldn't wait to see him every day on the way to school, on the way home. I just wanted that relationship with somebody who was older, you know, and I'd tell him about my day. And the first week of October, he said, my car's running. Do you want to go for a ride? It was an Austin Healey, so a cool sports car. And the worst thing I could think of is I'd get yelled at by my mom if I was late getting home. If somebody would have told me my friend was a junkie, I would have thought he collected junk. I have no idea about that world. And my friend took me to Main and Ferry in Niagara Falls, where there was another guy, and they took me up to an apartment, and I thought, okay, I'm scared now. Something's wrong. And they mixed up a combination of methamphetamine and heroin, and it was called a speedball back then, and they liked to watch virgins get high. So that was my introduction to drugs. And on the way to the police station, because, you know, even though they wanted to hurt me more, ADHD boys know how to run. And on the way to the police station, that same lie I had been telling myself about bullying, that this is my fault. If I just don't go to the arena, I won't get beat up. If I wouldn't have gone with Billy, if I would have told my mom about this guy. I didn't go to the police station. I went to the hostel on Bridge Street, one street over, and was assaulted that night. The next night, I'm out on Lundy's Lane with my hoodie up and a brick next to me, not in a facility. And two working girls, different time, found me and took me to their motel room and split a cap of heroin with me. And that quickly, I was a heroin addict. My dad found me and brought me home, but I come from a Christian home. I didn't belong there anymore. I'd gone into a world where I couldn't see. And, you know, it's hard to tell somebody what drugs are like or why people are addicts. But, you know, the noise was so loud in my head that the drugs made the noise go away, right? And so that's kind of what happened to me at that time. 15, I did 25 years in federal prison. 15 was my most dangerous year. I was in condition other than normal, and I did not have a knowledge base. So I was making innocent mistakes. I was formed. They put you in the psych wing when you overdose back then. The first time for 3 days, the second time for 30 days, and did drug treatment on me. Drug treatment back then was electroshock therapy. When I got out of the hospital, I stole my brother Phil's car. He's not here right now. And drove to Florida. I was 15. And I lived in Florida, and I thought, this is cool. I'll be down here. The Mexican heroin was cheap, it was $7 a gram. And there was an old guy who was so cool down there, and he would pick me up and give me rides to work. And he hurt me really badly. I was in the hospital for a period of time. And when I came back up here to Canada, my dad was waiting. My dad brought me back to the border to Canada. And I remember looking at my dad. I couldn't even look at his face, his eyes, because I was so ashamed. And that's a bad place to be, shame. And when we crossed the bridge just over here into Canada, I was wearing bare feet, which is ironic, hospital smock, and I was still draining from tubes on one side of my body from the injuries. And we came across the bridge, and I said, pull over, and I got out and walked away. I didn't want anything to do with my family because I knew I would kill them. Not me, myself, but my lifestyle would. We got your sister, you know? So I just hitchhiked to Niagara Falls. I knew a girl that sold drugs, and I went to her place and got high and cut my right arm about 5 inches with a razor blade. I'm now a cutter. I cut my body every 20 to 30 days for the next 20-something years, right? So my body's just ripped apart with that. That's not the worst. Oh, you're a cutter. Yeah, that's not the worst. I now have PTSD. By the way, we didn't have that word back then. It was called shell shock. I have something wrong with me where I shake uncontrollably and void my bladder if you put me near scary men. I'm now fear men pathologically. And so I started robbing men because I could. And eventually I robbed a Satan's Choice Motorcycle Club member. If you want to have a good life, don't rob bikers. Little thing you might want to jot down. And so now I'm hiding from the bikers. And the best place to hide back then was Port Colborne. There was a great big cop there named King George who walked the beat. And if you were down by the water, you were fine. And I got picked up and put under this guy's arm like a loaf of bread. That was Garnet McEwen, mother, the boss of the Satan's Choice. And he said, hey, you little rascal, quit robbing my guys. My damage, he liked. And he became my friend, very much my friend, and became a Christian years later. But he passed me off to Richmond Hill, Satan's Choice, and I started by 19, I was one of Canada's most dangerous men. I hurt every man I could touch, and they used that, and I would rob other drug dealers and stuff. At 21, I went to the penitentiary for armed robbery times through two, weapons times one, and possession of stolen goods. 8.5-year sentence, 21 years old. So by the way, this is how big my cell was. My elbows touched the wall in Kingston Penitentiary. I don't know what cells they show you on TV, but I wasn't in that one. Your bed hooks up against the wall on hinges and comes down. Horsehair mattress, open toilet. The first night, I go to bed, no pillow, put your shoes in a towel. The biggest sewer rat I've ever seen in my life climbs out of my toilet, shakes itself off, looks around myself for something to eat, walks down the range. I spent the whole night looking at the toilet going, how'd that happen? Yeah. And never told anybody about it because rat's a nickname for an informant, so I don't want to be called rat boy. But I found out that the guys were going and getting books and taking them to their cells from the library, and I thought, why are they taking books to their cells where they're taking them as lids for their toilet? So I did, you can imagine ADHD boy in prison. I did 15 years. During that time, some of it was good, some of it was bad. God brought a lot of good men in my life that helped me along the way, right? I got my mechanic's license inside prison during that 15 years. I also escaped twice. You know, and I went through four riots. I got shot a couple times during that time with the escapes and the riots, right? I've been stabbed. I mean, a lot had happened. And at 15 years, I started to get close to getting out because my sentence now was 20 years because of the escapes and stuff. Right? So a 20-year sentence, which is called a lifer in prison. And when I started getting close to getting out, I actually thought, I'll marry a steady Eddie. It's a girl I know from the club, and I married her, and we had a little girl named Nikki, and I'm going to get out to St. Catharines, and I'm going to get out to my chapter. I'm the Outlaws now, and I'm going to get – everything's going to be fine. I was the biggest monster that ever hit the ground walking. When I came out, as soon as I came out into the real world, I just was so anxious. I started using heroin and cocaine mixed together again. I started robbing everybody. got shot a couple times, back inside. When I say got shot a couple times, I wear body armor. I didn't get hurt that badly, right? And I went back in. I lasted 5.5 weeks after 15 years in. I thought I would do all these things, and guess what? I could only pretend I was good. Just like Neil talked about, you can give us the rules, but we can't do them, right? And so I have a grade 10 because I had to go to grade 10 Frontier College to do apprentice program. So I can study a little bit, but I'm dyslexic, so I do things wrong and stuff. So anyway, when I went back to prison, I'm 36 years old. I couldn't have been more ashamed if I had a dog cone on my head when I came in there. Do you know, after 15 years, I lasted 5.5 weeks. But when I came in there, something really bad has happened. I went to see my mom the night I was shot. I had a hit crew on me from another club, and I went to see my mom in Stouffville. They now know my mom lives in Canada. Even when somebody asked where my mom is, I said, my mom lives in Matadale. It's New York, right? And so because my mom was now in the game, I had to commit suicide. I could not let my mom or any of my family be in the game. And so in my cell, I had 4 grams of black tar heroin. Don't ask. We can get drugs in prison. I had 4 grams of black tar heroin. I'm going to swallow it. It's going to be the end of this life. I'm ready to go too. I was done at 36. And just to let you know, I'm done at 36. The last of my guys died at 31 years of age. So I'm 5 years beyond any of my guys. And I'm ready to commit suicide. And my dad's voice comes to me like he's standing behind me. And he says, if it's all lost, Rick, let's ask God one more time. Right? That's my dad's statement, if it's all lost. He's the only guy I know that uses that when he talks. And my dad, who never had anything to do with me, my mom's the one who was always taking care of me and in my corner, was the one who brought me to the Lord in a cell. Okay, Dad, I'll try. So I say, here is my prayer to God, because I didn't know how to do it. The sinner's prayer is in the back of the Gideon's Bibles, and that makes it, you can roll your weed with that paper. So there's never anything, it's on your paper. There's never any of that. So here is my prayer to God. Let me die like a man in the yard. Let me go to heaven on grace, like the guy on the cross next to you. And I flushed my drugs down the toilet and went junk sick, right? So here, by the way, that's the end of the bad part of my story, right? So I'm 36 years old, it's December, and I go junk sick in my cell. In 60 days, I have to be released into population. I'm an outlaw, it's all Hell's Angels in population. I'm not surviving this. That's why my prayer was the way it was, right? Here's what happened. As I'm waiting to go to population, I get called down to see a lawyer. So I go to the lawyer's room, and there's like 20 people in there. And the judge yelled at the Crown when I got caught with my handgun and bulletproof vest and got a few more years and said, how is he still a heroin addict when he's yours? You've had him for the last 15 years. Send him to treatment. I got to go to treatment. I had 15 years in with 10 more to go. I'm 3 Schedule 1 offenses, robbery and weapons. You don't get anything, right? I got to, God opened that door. So I got to go to treatment, right? I went to treatment for a year. God gave me a psychologist that was intelligent beyond measure because she never talked to me once. She said, write it out. She healed me nonverbally. She accused me of some things. I said no, and she said, oh yeah, write it out. And I wrote it out. And just to let you know, I wrote the last thing out to her just before I went back to prison after my year in treatment. And she said, Rick, we need to go one other place. You need to write one more thing to me before you go back. And I said, what's that? And she told me. And so just so you know, I'm speaking loosely here because we have children. 1971, 1995, never came out of my head. If you think of the Me Too movement, I finally wrote down what happened to me in Florida, right? And it just, I never cut again, you know? And do you know what? That's good enough. That's good enough. God, you can take me now. I'm not a drug addict. The first time in my adult life, I'm not a drug addict. I'll go now, right? And then it stuck. I went back to prison, and I'm okay. And so I called my mom, and I said, can you come see me? And I did the, I don't know what step it is in 12 steps, and stood in front of her and my dad, and I said, I've turned my life around. I've become a Christian. I think it's sticking. I'd like to come back in your life. And of course, my mom and dad were just holding back the whole time because my mom said, soon as I saw your eyes, I knew. So my eyes were different now. And so you know what? That's good enough. That my mom and dad love me, that's good enough, right? And you know what? So I have a grade 10 education. And I'm in prison. I'm part of the committee in there. And we represent when somebody comes. And we're in Collins Bay, and they come from Kingston, you know, Royal Military College and Queens. And so I'm part of the committee. We go down and represent. We go down one day, and there's Queens comes in, and two young Queens students come in, and every 9 guys go, girls, you know, and go to talk to them. And I look at their professor. He's 80 years old if he's a day. His arm doesn't work. His leg doesn't work. His sweater vest is buttoned up wrong. His beard is nicotine stained. He's a psych professor, right? And he looks like one, right? So I look at him. He's got a bullet wound on his forehead and one on his neck. I have them on me. I know what they look like. And I said, are you an old soldier? My grandpa died in the Second World War. He's buried in France. And he goes, sniper Belgium resistance, and talked to me for 2 hours. When it's time to leave, apparently 9 guys have girlfriends, and he looks at me, and he goes, you seem like a really smart guy, Rick. How come you don't have a university degree? So I laughed. We're in prison, in case you didn't notice. You know, we can only go to grade 10 with Frontier College, and I have that, but I'm learning disabled, and I have trouble studying. I'm not very smart. And he says to me, you're very smart. I'm going to help you get a GED, and together we're going to challenge Queen's University, and you're going to do a degree in my department. And when you graduate, I'm going to have your Queen's ring waiting for you. And he shows me his Queen's ring. And I think, that's the most senile guy I've ever met in my life. Do you know? Like, who does he think he is, you know? And the next day, I get called down to security. And there's Bill Leggett, the principal of Queen's University, because he has to make sure I'm not a sex offender. It's in their bylaw. I'm not. And then this professor and another professor. And Wilfred Vandervan, that professor, jumped in my life for the next 3 years. And when I mean jumped in my life, I mean he's allowed to come into the penitentiary under citizen's advisory because he's a professor at Queen's University. He spent 5 to 7 days a week with me. That he would sit outside my cell. Hey, do you know, I became the 17th person in Canadian history to get a university degree from inside a penitentiary. Is it, you know, that doesn't mean anything to me. The first thing I used the psych degree for was to talk to the guards and letting me go graduate at Queens. I have 5 years left to go, and I've escaped twice. Nobody wants to pull the trigger on me, no pun intended, to go out and, you know, with. So they let me go with guards. They said, shake our hand and promise us. And so I did. And I got to go out and graduate at Queens. My dad, who had MS and was dying, got to see me graduate at Queens. Like what? How good can God be, right? You know, I'm not going to live in the real world. My brain has to be cleaned, right? Like, I have to be killed. I know too much, right? I can't leave what I know, right? And so I'm never going to have a wife. I'm never going to have children. I'm never going to be in the real world. Like, Nikki's out there somewhere, but I don't know anything about her, right? I'm too much of a monster to even pursue that. But so here I go. I graduate at Queens. And I weighed about 240 pounds then. So I'm a big tattooed guy. I'm dressed well, though. Best set of clothes in that prison, right? And I go out, and I sit there with all the rich, young, good-looking Queens kids. And all I could think of is that song from Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the other. And the girl next to me nudges the guy next to her, and they point at my hands. And if you look at my arms right now, a lot of cover-up on there right now. There was some serious stuff on the back of my hands, right? And she pointed my hand, and I'm in my head, I go, oh, don't go there today, you know? And she said, Ked, we see the ring. This is the Queen's ring. It was in a box. That professor did everything he said he was going to do, including giving me this Queen's ring, right? And when I got off the platform, I went down and hugged him and kissed him and told him I loved him, which, okay, you know, that I could do any of those things, right? Like, I'm not capable of doing any of those things. And by the way, he's a professor. Do you know what he whispered in my ear? BA is the kindergarten of learning. Let's start your next degree. So, you know, teachers. But two things from that. One is he died. It was at the end of his life. And when I went to see his wife and said, how do I thank you for giving me your husband the end of his life? And she goes, you want to understand this right now, Rick, the other way around. He looked for you his entire life. He said, give me somebody at zero and I can take him. And so isn't it neat that I got to be his bucket list? But there's something else that's neat. I got sent back to Millhaven for fighting because I like fighting. So I'm back in Millhaven. And he shows up outside my door and we're working on our stuff. And he said to me, how are you like this? How can you get beaten and you just jump right back up with a smile on your face? How is this happening? And he came to the Lord in Millhaven too, right? Isn't that, I get to see him forever, right? He gave me a professor, he gave me a degree, and I gave him a ticket. But as I was hugging him, I looked behind him, and there's my teacher. And my teacher is, she's a Queens person, Queens teacher, and she's working in the prisons, and she's the principal of our school in there. And now that I have a degree, I work with the young guys, you know, in prison. And she came to watch me graduate. I thought that was huge respect. She, single mom with three little boys. Now she's married with a girl and three little boys and a really weird husband. I married her. This is, there she is. That's Heather. But that's somebody that God had for me. I didn't know he had somebody for me. I didn't. He was working on her. She had to go become a Christian. There was things that had to happen so she could, but because she edited my book, White Noise, she knew my heart, right? And sorry for me to, I'm skipping like this. My brain doesn't work very good. I'm getting older, right? But had a lot of damage. There's some important things that need to go on here. When I want to say, so you guys know that. When I was 9 years old, there was a BIC. I'm a BIC-er, right? Brethren in Christ, used to be called. Be in Christ. There was a guy, his name's Bill Friesen, still remember his name. I was 9 years old. He was a wood carver. He helped us, thanks. I didn't get the smack in the back of the head. He helped me carve cars, like Merrittville Speedway, and do the colors, and we would race them. And to this day, I remember the time he spent with me. The time, you know, my dad had four other kids, right? This guy spent time with me. And his thing was, if at the end of the summer, he'd give you a little skinny Bible with your name in gold if you memorize John 3:16, which I do. I could say it right now, right? And he brought me to the Lord. I think he did. I think my name went in a book. And that's why, because I didn't, at nine, I didn't know how to be deceitful. I just didn't know how to love Jesus, right? It took me, I needed to be 50 before I could really be at the, even my wife had to hold, I got out at 46, she had to hold my identity for a few years till I was strong enough, you know. But what a blessing. I work with at-risk boys, angry young men with no fathers, but at-risk boys, you know, and it's my turn now. I'm the corny old guy, right? But I can show you the corny old guy all the way through my thing. The guards that were ridiculed because they were Christians and would put the Gideon's Bible in solitary. Do you know how many times I've been in solitary? Yeah. One time I was in there 8 months. Do you know, like, they would, I was, I like this word, what they called me, I was incorrigible. They had to make that up for me or something. Anyway, like, just realize that as a Christian, you have no idea that Holy Spirit sitting inside of you is talking to people, even when you're not, right? When I was in prison, there was a guy who was my enemy. And when I say my enemy, I mean K2 riot in Millhaven. There was 12 guys on the range when the riot started. At the end, there was 9 left alive. It, really bad, right? And he comes into my prison as I'm a Christian 8 years later. And he walks right up to me at the school and punches me in the face as hard as he can. The problem is I'm a fighter. I saw the move. I slipped the punch. I knock him out. He's laying there unconscious on the ground, and I'm going, well, that wasn't very Christian, you know? And here come the guards, you know? And on the way there, I stopped the guards, and I went, that was my fault. And they said, Ozzy, we have cameras. And I said, remember what I was like 8 years ago? And they went, ooh, yeah. And I said, he doesn't know I'm different. Give him a pass. So that guy About a year later, he walked up to me in the yard and said, "How are you like this?" And I talked to him about being a Christian. And I said, he goes, "Yeah, I knew you were a Christian. That's why I took a swing at you. Christians are weak." And I said, "They are." And he goes, "Yeah." I said, "How do you know that?" He goes, "It's in the Bible." I said, "What's in the Bible?" "You have to turn the other cheek." So we're in the yard of a medium security federal prison. And I said, "Are you quoting scripture to me?" We had a good laugh because I haven't read that yet. When I got, he's doing triple life. It's a, one of the problems I had with him is he's such an aggressive guy because he'll never be out of prison. As I got out of prison, the day I got out in 2003, as I walked around and had every place sign, he walked next to me. And I says, "What can I do for you, Matt?" And he goes, tell me how you're like this. And so he came to the Lord right there. And so triple life, but I'll see him in heaven, right? Kelly, can you come up now? I'm just going to finish with this. 25 years in prison from when I was 21 till I was 46. And when I came out, I just want to tell what God's done in my life, how he's turned me around, right? How he's loved me, right? How I'm his favorite. So is everybody else, by the way. But how I'm his favorite. But how's anybody going to relate to a guy who did 25 years in prison, right? How's anybody going to relate to that? Remember, I don't know the real world. Never lived in it as an adult. And I come out and realize the prisons you guys make for yourselves out here are way worse than the prison I was in. My brick and mortar I can step out of. What guys put themselves into and women out here. You think of alcoholism, just some of the other, you know, pornography, all the things, the drugs, all the things, the prisons that guys get in. Just love Jesus. He'll pull you out of it, right? And then give you who you really are. I thought I was a biker. I thought I was a tough guy. Do you know what I really am? I'm a family man. I'm a big baby. I like my grandkids. So God will love you who you really are because you don't know who you are. Respect. Thank you.